Hello and welcome to the Blind Boy Podcast, you juicy Susans. How is everybody? It's March now, which is... I got a small vibe of positivity today. I noticeably heard the sound of birds. I heard the sound of birds properly for the first time, which signaled that we're coming out of winter. And it was an enthusiastic type of bird song. I think they were robins. They looked like robins, but there was an enthusiasm to the bird song. Maybe I was projecting onto the birds, projecting intentions and motivations onto the birds. But I genuinely, when I heard the birds today, it's the first time I've properly heard them since fucking September. Actually, there's an interesting thing, man. And I wonder if I'm right or wrong. So I heard birds singing today. And legitimately, there was an enthusiasm and a motivation and a sense of like a goal-focused tone to how they were singing. Like, that's the vibe I got. The vibe I got was like the birds had just gotten out of bed and they have some shit planned and they're all chatting about how to get it done. And they want to support each other in doing it. No one was complaining, right? But then, when I hear birds in September, like the swallows that are up on a pylon getting ready to leave, and they're all chattering, that fills me with a sad feeling. Like I'm being left out, you know? That they're going to have to do something that doesn't involve me. Like when your friends have got tickets to go and see a gig or a festival and you didn't bother getting tickets and now you're like really disappointed because they're heading and you're not. And is that real or am I projecting onto the birds? Because it's the 3rd of March, lads. So legitimately, the birds, literally, they've got shit to do. They're thinking about building nests, mating, laying eggs. Alright, they're also thinking about the fucking ground isn't cold anymore. The insects are doing their thing. We've got more food. We have reason to be excited and happy. But I'm aware of this. It's spring. And I also notice the smell in the air and the different quality of light. Am I projecting an optimistic enthusiasm onto those birds? Or is there literally enthusiasm in their bird song? And similarly, in September, when the swallows are congregating on electrical pylons. Like, I know what they're doing. They're having the last meeting before they all migrate to South Africa. They're all meeting, getting ready to leave. But yet, when I hear those swallows in September singing on a pylon, I feel insecure and I feel like I'm being rejected by those birds. Are they actually rejecting me? Are they up there going, yeah, fuck it, man. Let's go down to South Africa. It's going to be class. It's going to be pure warm. Look at that prick down there. Look at that fucking prick down there. Look at him. He doesn't have wings. He can't go down to the warm South Africa. He has to stay here in Ireland where it's freezing. Does that exist in their bird song? Or am I projecting human emotions into their song? So I'm struggling a bit with the... I'm struggling a bit with the pandemic at the moment because I can't run. We're all in extreme lockdown, lads. We're all in extreme lockdown here in Ireland. And I have one thing in my day that I thoroughly enjoy. One thing that I really look forward to. And that's my run. Alright? I do a 10-kilometre run every day, which is really silly. I shouldn't be doing the 10-kilometre run every day. But I need to get out of my gaff. I can't go to the gym. I miss the gym desperately. I can lift weights at home if I want. But I exercise for mental health rather than physical health. Physical health is a symptom of my exercise. But really, I'm doing it for emotional well-being. Exercise gives me very, very beneficial brain chemicals. That's all I can say. And exercise is very important to me. So I can lift weights at home, but it doesn't do the trick for my brain. So I've been finding myself running nearly every day for endorphins. But what that's done, unfortunately, is I haven't been letting my Achilles heel rest. And now I have a sore Achilles heel anytime I run, even if I try and stay off it for a day or two. So right now I can't run. I think it would be very foolish of me to run right now, because the Achilles tendon is, you don't want to fuck that up. You don't want to fuck that up. And I really, really love running. And I want to be able to run until I'm as old as possible. So I have to mind my legs. I have to really mind them and stretch properly and do this. So if my Achilles heel is saying to me, I'm sore whenever you run, you don't fucking run on it. But an unfortunate consequence of this is I'm projecting human emotions into birds. And instead of simply enjoying the sound of birds in a here and now present fashion, I'm projecting enthusiasm into their song, and worse, thinking about if sparrows in September are rejecting me. So that's how things are going for Old Blind Boy. I did find a little bit of ironic joy in the fact that my Achilles heel is literally and figuratively my Achilles heel. If the running is what was keeping me sane and helping me to cope, then my Achilles heel is my Achilles heel. And now I'm going stone mad. I know I'm grand. I'm grand. I'm just disappointed that I can't have my regularly scheduled run. So if you're a brand new listener, you might want to listen to some earlier podcasts. If you're a regular listener, you know the crack. Last week, You got two podcasts. You got two big hot takes. One episode was about the Japanese electronic group Yellow Magic Orchestra from the 1970s. And another episode was about Irish folklore history. The history of Irish outlaw characters from the penal laws, who were a type of superhero, and how they went on to influence the fight for workers' rights in America. So this week, I don't have a big giant hot take, because I didn't have the time to put research into doing one, because last week I did two podcasts and I'm also working on a different project. So I only had a little bit of time to prepare for this week's podcast. But I'm going to do a companionship podcast, where I'm just going to answer some questions that I asked on Instagram and navigate through them, and hopefully we'll get a little bit of a podcast hug. And I never answer enough of your questions anyway. I get fucking tons of questions. And if you've ever tried to send me mails, Twitter mails, or on Instagram, or on Patreon, just know I get over 100 mails a day. So I answer what I can. But I don't get to look at everyone's mail, unfortunately. Even though I'd like to. I'd be at it all day if I was to respond to every mail. But when I see ones that I like, I respond to it if I can. And if not, I take a note of it and I say, maybe I can answer this on a podcast. So here's one I got from a lad called PJ. And PJ says, I'm a 16-year-old and I listen to your podcast weekly. Could you do a podcast on your secondary school experience, if you wouldn't mind? So thank you, PJ. I love hearing that, like, someone who's 16 is listening to my podcast, because I don't associate my podcast with people in school. I always think that it's people who are like college age and over listening to this. So thank you for that. Speaking of the youth, I've been trying to use TikTok this week, because TikTok is it's a new app, and it's huge, absolutely huge with teenagers, and I kind of just have to have a presence on it. Like, my job requires the use of social media, and as I mentioned last week, I fucking hate Twitter. I don't like Twitter anymore. It's such a negative place. It's such a negative place where everybody is... No, it's not people's fault. Twitter as a platform... So Twitter, the platform, rewards combative, hostile and negative behaviour. So it's a hostile and negative place and not a particularly fun place to be. But TikTok actually isn't bad. Once you get your algorithm going, it's not actually not that bad. So I've been enjoying TikTok, and I put up a little snippet of one of my videos from Twitch, and it actually did really, really well. I put it up at like 11 o'clock at night, and I woke up the next morning and it had 50,000 plays and I got 6,000 followers. So I was thrilled with that. That's a pure sign of me being an old man there now. Someone just mentions that they're 16 and in school, so then I immediately start talking about TikTok like a fucking undercover Garda at a festival when I was a teenager, wearing deck shoes and a Nirvana t-shirt, bringing up text messaging for no reason just because it's a thing that young people do. So there you go, PJ. I'm on TikTok. I'm a grown man on TikTok, alright? Because I know that that's what's cool with ye 16-year-olds. So, what was my experience like in secondary school? What was my experience like in secondary school? I failed my leaving cert and I was expelled from school. So technically you'd think that my experience was bad or that I remember it negatively. But I don't. I actually really enjoyed being in school. The experience of it was very fun and very exhilarating. So I didn't go to school every day and feel miserable. And the reason for this is... I was failed by somebody. I was definitely failed by... The system. I was failed by the system. Without a doubt. Okay? I shouldn't have failed my fucking leaving cert. I shouldn't have been in a position where I'm getting kicked out of school. I was a child and I found myself in a position where the education system and the school system simply could not meet my needs, help me to identify what my needs were, and made me excessively feel like a failure. I was a failure. Within the system of Irish secondary school, I was a failure. And I don't fully accept personal responsibility for that. I think I was failed. So one of the things with me is, I was born into a family of 8 people. And when I was born, all of those people were adults. Like, my youngest brother was like 16 when I was born. So I was effectively born into a large family of only adults. And the thing with that is, as a child, I was then raised to speak to adults as simply other human beings. A power dynamic exists whereby sometimes children are raised to look up to adults and to speak to adults as if to put on an extra layer of respect when you're speaking to adults. A lot of children are, you know, they're born into a family where there's other children their own age, and the adults in the family teach them, when you meet an adult, a big person, you must be really polite. You must refer to them as Mr. This, Mr. That, and you got to show them this extra level of respect. I didn't have that because I'm born into a family of a load of adults, and they were young adults and they were mad and having crack. So I never was told call adults Mr., call adults Sir or Miss. I was never told to treat adults differently. Adults are simply my peers. And this was really beneficial for me as a child because I was quite curious, and it meant I would ask the adults in my house any question I wanted and discuss things and all this stuff. And there wasn't this silly barrier of be quiet, you're a child, have respect around the adults. That didn't exist. The barriers didn't exist. So that gave me, that made me as a child very, very confident. Very confident and very outspoken. And I didn't have a performance. I wasn't trained in the performance of how to speak to adults. Adults were just other human beings. But when I went outside my house and I was with my peers, now I'm talking when I'm 6 or 7, and my friends are also 6 or 7, I would notice that when they met like a neighbour or when they were speaking to someone in a shop who was an adult, they had this extra layer of performance that they would do when they're speaking to adults, where they call them Mr. or Mrs., they're really, really quiet, and they're being fake, they're being false. That's what I saw it as. I was like, "What? Why the fuck? Why are you talking to the neighbour as like that? Why are you gone all quiet? And why are you pretending to be really nice as if butter wouldn't melt in your mouth just because you're talking to a really tall person?" I didn't understand that. I found it strange, and it was, and it is fake. We raise children to be fake when it comes to adults. We raise children to be, when you speak to another, if you speak to the fucking neighbour, you got to be really quiet, you got to put your hands behind your back, you got to refer to them as Mr. and Mrs. and speak when you're spoken to and do all this. And parents teach kids to do this with adults because what the it's the parent injecting fear into their own fear into the child. When you meet the neighbour, you must be really, really, really polite and put on this performance of how you speak to adults, because if you don't, they will think I'm a bad parent. They're going to think I'm a bad parent. So perform a fake niceness when you speak to adults. So the other kids had that, but I didn't, because everyone in my house was an adult and there was no point in teaching me that. There was no point. I was allowed to curse. Because my fucking brothers were like 18 or 19, cursing everywhere. So when I was 5, I was allowed to say cunt and fuck. Because there was no point. There's no point in my ma saying to me, you can't say cunt. Because I'm like, then why are my brothers saying it? And they're 19. So of course they're going to be saying cunt all the time. So I was a child who might flippantly say the word cunt to my neighbour. And not in a mean way. It's just, I would speak to adults as if they were my peers. And the problem with this is that some adults like this in a child. Some adults see that as, they view the behaviour in its context. It's like, this child isn't calling me a cunt. They're not being rude. They're just refusing to engage in the performance of fake niceness that children do when they usually speak to me. And some adults think that's funny, and they're really cool with it, and they're grand. But then other adults get a little bit of a power trip when children are really polite to them. Some adults get that power trip. And I would then, when I met adults that were insecure and got a power trip out of children being polite to them and being excessively nice, when I didn't do that, I was labelled as cheeky. So I was now seen as cheeky because I had the audacity to refer to the adult by their first name or ask the adult a question, or I would initiate the conversation with the adult rather than speaking when I'm spoken to. And this became a big issue then when I would get to school. So then when I'm in school, I didn't really understand the authority dynamic, but with teachers, because teachers to me were just like, you're only a couple of fucking years older than my brothers. I don't see you as a big fancy teacher at all. You're just another human being. So I very quickly found myself getting chastised excessively for behaviours that I considered to be normal. Like a big, I remember getting dragged up to the principal's office. Dragged up, like the nuns, man. I was 7 or 8. Dragged up to the principal's office. And my mother being dragged in too. Because teachers had been reporting that I was using foul language in the schoolyard. And I was. Because I grew up in a house with a lot of older brothers who were saying fuck, piss, shit, cunt every 2 seconds. Not in an aggressive way. Just that's how you speak when you're a teenager or in your early 20s. So I was flippantly cursing because I didn't know any different. And then fucking my ma had to come in and explain to a nun. Where did he learn all these words? Where did he learn these words? And then of course my ma was mortified, really embarrassed. And instead of my ma kind of going, he's got a lot of older brothers who are adults. And this is how they speak. And I can't do anything about it. But you know what? They're just words. And what's the context and intent he's using it in? Is the question that should have been asked to the nun. Is he using these words to bully other children, to hurt other children? Or is he simply flippantly using words that we label as bad? So the nun then went pure fucking judgmental. And basically treated my ma as if I was being neglected. So I received major chastisement from a young age in school. Simply for not treating adults. Not treating insecure adults how they expect to be treated by children. But it got me a bad reputation in school, unfortunately. In baby school and then all the way up to primary school. I was seen as really cheeky, disruptive, troublemaker. And a lot of it wasn't. I was a child, a lot of it wasn't. I just simply spoke to adults as peers. And I was also excessively curious. So it got me labelled as a troublemaker. So then what happened is that when I got to secondary school, I remember being in secondary school and in first year. So the thing is with my secondary school, in fucking first year, everyone's thrown into random classes. Okay, so I'm like 12, 13, first year of secondary school, and we're all in random classes. And the thing is, I don't know, are things the same now, but back in my day, when you went into second year, you were put into a class based on your academic performance in first year. And I really wanted to get into one of the good classes. I wanted, because my brothers who'd been in the school said to me, you need to get into the A classes because that's where the good teachers are. The teachers who enjoy their job, who are really interesting, who are good, they teach the A classes. But then the B classes, that's where they put the teachers who are really fucking bad. So in first year of secondary school, I made a decision. I'm going to be a nerd. I'm going to work really, really hard at every single subject, and I'm gonna behave myself in class and use, because I was excited about secondary school, because the thing is with primary school, you're not really taught subjects, bit of English, Irish, whatever, and maths, whatever the fuck, and then they'd touch on something like history or geography. But I was really excited by the fact that, wow, I'm in secondary school and at 9 o'clock I've got maths. And then I go to a different class and there's Irish. And then I go to another class with a different teacher and it's history. And this made me feel like an adult and it was really exciting. So for first year, I worked my fucking arse off and I behaved myself. And I really prided myself on being studious and getting results and treating school professionally. Treating school with a bit of maturity. With the goal of, if I just stick my head down and do the work, I'm going to get into an A class next year. I'm going to get into that A class and I'm going to have all these really good teachers that care about their jobs and that all my brothers had told me about were like really interesting teachers. So I did it and I got really good results. I got a lot of A's in my summer exams. So then on the morning of second year, when I'm like 13, they divide all the students in the whole year and they're calling out the names of who gets to go into the... There was like 3A classes and 3B classes. So 1A1, 1A2. No, 1A, 1A1 and 1A2. And then there was 3B classes. So as they're calling out all the fucking students' names... Now, remember, I got a lot of A's, so I got the actual results because I worked my ass off in first year and I got the results that would get me into an A class. But then when the classes actually get called out, I got thrown into a class called 2B2, which was the worst class that you could get put into. It was the worst class. It was for the people who scored the lowest, and also for people who had behaviour problems. Now, what broke my fucking heart was I wasn't well behaved in primary school. Now, I was a child. We're talking now about my behaviour between the ages of 7 and 11. I was not well behaved in primary school. I was a troublemaker. I was a messer. I was outspoken. I was cheeky. Because I'd been called fucking cheeky by teachers since the start. But when I got to secondary school, I was told I was going to have a clean slate. That's what they said to me. You're going to have a clean slate when you get into secondary school. You have a clean slate. So when I got into first year, I had this pride of, I'm not going to misbehave. I'm going to do my work. I'm going to get the results. And I did it. And they still fucking threw me into 2B2. The worst class. And the thing with 2B2 is that it was such a bad class that you were almost a pariah. When they announced the students that are going into 2B2, the whole auditorium would go quiet, and that then felt kind of shameful, and I was fucking furious because I got a lot of A's, I got the results, I put in the work, but clearly I was being put into 2B2 because I had a bad record of behaviour from my previous school. So my school basically said, I don't give a shit about this cunt's results. He was a disruptive student when he was a child, so we're putting him into this classroom. And what made me angry, I wasn't angry that I was in 2B2 because I was actually in there with a load of people who were my friends anyway, who I hung around with. That was the other thing, they identified who the groups were, and my friends were troublemakers. And I was in with my friends, but what made me angry was I put in the fucking work. I got the results to get into an A class. Why am I not in an A class? And the unfairness of that felt fucking terrible. And also what made me really, really angry. It wasn't even anger, lads. It wasn't anger, because with anger there's motivation. It was a deep sadness and unfairness. I wouldn't have had the self-confidence for anger. It was a deep sadness and unfairness. I wouldn't have identified it as anger. What made me feel, what broke my fucking heart at 13... is most of the lads that got into the A classes, they got there because they worked hard and they got great results. But then there was other lads in the A classes, because I asked them, I obviously had all my results, and I was like, I got an A in English, got a B in history, all this, really good results. And I went around to lads I knew who got into the A classes, and some of them were like, fuck it, this fella got a load of A's, okay. But then other lads got way worse results than me, and they found their way into these A classes. And I didn't understand it at the time, but it was because of like who their parents were. It's because of some of them, like, you know, their dad might be a solicitor or a barrister or a college lecturer. So the school put them into the A class because their parents had clout and influence. And I didn't have that. My parents were just regular working people. Simple as that. So that felt deeply unfair. And what it did is it made trying seem pointless. It made trying and working hard at school, it made it feel pointless because A, I'd also been lied to. I'd been told, you have a clean slate. It doesn't matter that you got in trouble. in primary school. It doesn't matter that that happened. You have a chance to try it anew if you just work hard. And that's not how it worked out. And I got thrown into the fucking worst class. Now the problem with being in 2B2 is, I'm talking, this was the late 90s, alright? And I don't want to be shitting on teachers, but there were teachers in my school in the late 90s. These teachers were very old. Some of them were deeply, deeply troubled people. Deeply troubled people who really had lost any passion for teaching at all, and it had gotten to them. So they were violent, reactionary, not interested in teaching us, and then worst of all, because we were in 2B2 and it was a small class, it was only like 14 people, so it was like 14 of the who's considered to be the worst students in the school, the worst. These teachers then hated you because you were in this class. So because the class had such a bad reputation, these old lad teachers come in and they fucking hate you. So my first day of being in 2B2, so you have to remember, half an hour previously, I think I'm getting into an A class because I got these good results. And then then it's like, fuck that, you're going to 2B2. So I'm now there in 2B2. And our first teacher comes in and he's an old lad of about 70. And he, in his mind, has it made up, going, the gurriers, they used to call us, gurriers. I'm going into the class full of gurriers now. Now, I know what these gurriers are like. So, I have to show them who's boss. So now, for the first time in my life, because I'm like 13, I now have a grown man screaming in my face. Scream at that, like, with all the anger that you can imagine a grown man can get out of his body without hitting you. I now have a grown man screaming in my face, and I haven't done anything wrong. It's simply because he's walked into the class, has his mind made up about who I am because I'm there, and is now showing me who's boss. And that was fucking horrible, and it was demoralizing, and I'd never been screamed at by an adult like that, and that just became normal. I don't know why my parents didn't go down to the school and go, the fuck is he doing in 2B2? He got a lot of A's. Why isn't he in an A class like he deserves? They didn't do it because my parents came from a generation where priests and teachers are right and you don't question it. So I fucking gave up. I gave up at that moment in secondary school. In second year, I literally gave up. I really, really didn't want to. What's the point now in trying? And the other thing then, when you're in 2B2, the teachers are deliberately pushing you towards doing pass rather than honours for the junior cert. And like subtle things like, so I still knew lads that were up in the A class. And the thing is, when you're in 2B2, you're not getting out of it. You have to stick with that until junior cert. So then when it gets to 3B2, which is the next year, in third year, that's when career guidance starts to happen. And the teachers were going into the A classes and they were talking to them about a serious business now. Next year you're going to start the Leaving Cert cycle. Now you might want to be thinking about going to University of Limerick, and you want to think about being accountants, or you want to think about being solicitors, professional careers. But then when they come down to us, and I remember it was my fucking vice principal speaking to us as a class and literally saying to us, don't mind ye now, don't mind this Leaving Cert stuff for a lot of ye. A lot of ye now might want to get trades. Ye might want to think of getting trades now next year. And what they're doing is, the vice principal was basically suggesting to our class that we don't come back to school next year, that we quit school at about 15 or 16, get your junior cert, but don't come back after that, go and get a trade. Because you're in the what the school considers to be the worst class, the bottom class. And when the teachers are screaming at you on the first day, and you're clearly in the worst class, your sense of values change. So the thing is about being in 2B2 and 3B2 was you still require a sense of self-worth and self-esteem and a sense of identity. But because you're in that quote-unquote slow class or quote-unquote gorrier class, the young fellas in the A stream, they kind of laugh at you behind your back. You're kind of sniggered at going, ah, the fucking the tickos in 2B2. But what you had to do then is you had to find self-esteem in our class. You shape your identity differently. So we would say to each other, those fucking Egypts up in the A class, they're all swats and nerds. They're fucking nerds and swats. Fuck them. And you start to identify as, I'm fucking cool, man. Fuck the system. I don't give a shit about studying. Fuck them, man. And then you start smoking fags and you start smoking hash. And you start to identify with being disruptive. And then you start to find a weird sense of pride in, I'm a fucking rebel. I'm outside the system. 2B2 is like being in jail. We've got the hardest cunts in our class. And then for me within the class, like, I'd given up on studying. When you're in 2B2 and 3B2, the teachers don't ask for your homework because they've already given up on you. So I stopped doing homework in second year. I stopped, like, at 13 years of age, I simply stopped doing homework because nobody was asking me for it. Speaking of homework, the ocarina has nothing to do with homework, really. Let's have a little ocarina pause. I'm going to play a Spanish clay whistle, and you're going to hear an advert for something.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That was the ocarina pause. This podcast is supported by you, the listener, via the Patreon page, patreon.com/theblindboypodcast. This podcast is my full-time job. This podcast is how I earn a living. I have full editorial control over this podcast. No advertiser tells me what to speak about. I can do what I want. Podcast is also a huge amount of work to do. So if you're enjoying it, if you like it and you're getting something from this and I'm providing you with comfort and entertainment, just please consider paying me for the work that I'm doing. All I'm looking for is the price of a cup of coffee or a pint once a month. That's it. If you like this podcast, would you buy me a coffee or a pint if you met me? If the answer is yes, that's what you can do. If you can't afford to, if you can't afford that, don't worry. You can listen to the podcast for free. That's fine. But if you can afford it, you're paying for someone who can't afford it to listen. So everyone gets a podcast. I earn a living for the work that I'm doing. What more could you want? It's a model that's based on soundness and kindness. And it's how I earn a living. And thank you to all of my patrons. Like the podcast, share it. And also catch me on Twitch once a week, Thursday nights at 8:30, twitch.tv/theblindboypodcast, where you can talk to me live and I'm making a live musical to the events of a video game. I have some new equipment this week and I'm really looking forward to Thursday. So now let's go back to my experience of secondary school, which I didn't think I was going to be talking about it at this length, but I'm uncovering quite a lot of memories and I'm realising this isn't something I think about a lot, and it feels a little bit therapeutic for me, to be honest, to be uncovering these feelings that I don't think about, or these memories that I don't think about a lot. And then, so the thing is, within the culture then of the students in 2B2, none of us consider ourselves to be academic. So what happens is, the value system in the class is, you can be one of two things. You can be hard, or you can be a mad bastard. So if you're hard, that means that you're strong and you're prepared to get into fights and no one will fuck with you. And anyone who is going to slag you certainly isn't going to do it to your face because you're a hard cunt. And that became a value system within the class, we'll say. Now, this is an all-boys school. Now, I'm not hard. I'm not a violent person. I'm not good at fighting. This was never something I had any interest in. So I had to go down the route of mad bastard. So in order for me to have any degree of respect within the class and to get respect essentially from the hard lads, I had to be fucking mad. Didn't give a shit about authority, didn't give a fuck about rules, being as disruptive as possible, locking the teacher out of the class, smoking fags at the back of class, telling the teacher to fuck off, at lunchtime, sniffing links through a school jumper at lunchtime, making sure everyone sees you. So it's like, oh man, look at him, he's fucking sniffing links at lunchtime. What a mad cunt. Holy shit, he doesn't give a fuck about anything. And then all of that, feeling good because my peers now have respect for me, because this is what, those are the parameters of respect when you're in 3B2. And what are you going to do? We're children. We don't have emotional maturity. We don't have the ability to think critically. We're in a space where you're supposed to be making mistakes, but there's no one guiding you otherwise, showing you alternative routes for self-esteem or self-worth. Now, I was fortunate because I was going home to a house where, at least in my house, music, art, education, these things were valued. So for my family, they were going, what the fuck is he doing? He loves listening to music. He plays instruments. He draws and he paints at home. He's such a passionate, creative young fella. Why the fuck is he in school sniffing solvents and smoking fags and acting like he wants to get expelled? The thing is too, when I was speaking earlier about the type of teachers that were teaching us, so the vast majority of the teachers that were teaching 2B2, I think they were kind of nearly given our class as a way to encourage them to retire. It was that vibe. I don't want to be mean to these men. They were just older and they should have quit long ago, and they were very, very angry, aggressive, contemptuous men. But anyone who's relating to this experience in school, if you had a similar experience to this, where you're kind of labelled and pushed into something, you always know that there's one teacher who's going to be sound. And for me, there was one teacher through all this shit in second year and third year. My English teacher, Mr. Crow. And he was young. He would have been in his 20s at the time. And he used to like the crack of teaching us. He used to like that we were bold. And he was also, he was the teacher that was sound, so you'd never mess in his class out of respect. He used to give me praise academically and encourage me academically in my written English. And that then, I'd do homework for him. Like, he identified that I was creative and used to love language, so he would get me on a Friday, my homework was write a short story and have it to me for Monday. So I used to write short stories for him and I'd write them all weekend. and I'd get creative flow. I used to fucking love it. And he used to let me write short stories about whatever I wanted and encouraged me to be really funny. And I remember one in particular. It was a short story about the vice principal. And it was about the vice principal going to his golf course that he goes to, but then getting down on the ground and eating magic mushrooms off the ground to the point that he grows a beard of mud on his face. And I remember describing his trip, the vice principal's psychedelic trip after he eats the mushrooms off the ground with his mud beard. And I got crayons, coloured crayons, and all the bits that were psychedelic, I wrote out in coloured crayons. And then Mr. Crow would read this story to the class. And it's like reading a story that I'd written about the vice principal playing golf, eating magic mushrooms in Castletroy golf course. And then that being okay, and the teacher reading it out and going, this is really, really good. And then everyone else in the class laughing their arses off and loving English and loving creativity because the teacher is being sound. The teacher is being sound. And that really got me through. That absolutely got me through. That was the... It didn't matter how many other teachers were dickheads who thought that we were... Who called us gorriers to our fucking faces. Because that... Mr. Crow was so fucking sound and encouraging. And that really got me through it. And I remember... One of the fucking proudest moments of my life would have been second or third year, because it got back to me. Mr. Crow was also teaching some of the A classes, and while he was teaching one of the A classes, they were doing creative writing, and he said to them, there's a young fella down in 3B2, and he has the best command of the English language in this school. And I heard that, and I went home and fucking cried. Because it was the first time in that anyone had said that I was fucking good in that school. That was 20 fucking years ago. But I know now for a fact that same teacher now, when he, over we'll say the past 10 years, if he has a class full of students and they might be disruptive or he's trying to get them to listen, he'll say to them, I used to teach blind boy, you know. I used to teach blind boy. And then they'll go, fuck off, no you didn't, what was he like? And he'll like withhold stories about me as a dangling a carrot of like, if you behave yourselves now, I'll tell you this, I'll tell you that. Which for me is lovely to know. That's lovely to know because it means that like, it's like having a positive impact on kids that are in there now, if you know what I mean. Although I think it's a really different school now. There'd be no 3B2 in there now. It's gone more of a kind of a prestige school now at the moment. And that was a little glimmer of light. But other than that, I was identifying as a mad bastard, being as disruptive as possible. And that's what my peers would have considered me. It's like, oh, him, he's a mad bastard. He didn't give a fuck about anything. He'll do anything, he will. To simply have a sense of self-esteem, self-worth and identity in my peer group in a system where these are the things that are valued. One thing that I do feel would have been very helpful to me, possibly helpful to me, would be if I had been able to do a year that's called transition year. So after third year, after your junior cert, there's an optional extra year called transition year. And this year, it's not fully academic. This is a year where you get to do work experience, you get to learn real world skills. If you're interested in art or creativity, you can actually have an opportunity at about the age of 15 to work in a theatre or to do something with music or painting. It's an extra year where you mature and explore your interests before you do your Leaving Cert cycle. I applied for transition year and wasn't allowed to do it because of my reputation and behaviour and because I'd been in 3B2. I applied for it and they're just like, we can't trust you to do transition year. This is a year for where students are responsible for their own schedule and things like that. Not a fucking hope. You'll ruin it for everybody. Just do fifth year. Get out of the school as soon as possible. So transition year was denied me, which again broke my fucking heart, because I'd have been perfect for transition year. I could have explored my talents and abilities that were outside of prescribed academic curriculum. So then by the time fifth year comes around, you're no longer in these shitty classes anymore. When it gets to fifth year, it's a little bit more egalitarian, and it's not as, you kind of choose your honours subject or you choose your past subjects, and you're put into classes that way. But because I was in the B classes, the worst B class, I wasn't really getting access to any of the honours subjects, even if I wanted them in Leaving Cert, because I was doing past subjects. And I'd been, hadn't had to do homework since second year. So I go into fifth year and it's too late by that stage. It's fucking too late. It doesn't matter. I'm a disruptive little shit who challenges authority at all points, haven't a hope of doing anything academic because I've fallen too far behind. So I had to find an identity around being a mad bastard. And there's no such thing as a clean slate, because I remember going into fifth year. I can't remember the class that it was. I can't remember the exact class. But I'm sitting down in this class, first day of fifth year. Teacher walks in. The teacher doesn't know who I am. I don't know the teacher. But he's aware that my name is on his list of students. I'm sitting down in my new class with a lot of people I don't really know. And he walks in the door, and the first thing he does when he gets in the door, he screams my name out at the top of his lungs really angrily, out into the ether. And as he's doing it, he grabs a small little desk and grabs and pushes it towards his desk at the top. So it's this desk that's not sitting with the other desks in the class. It's this special little desk beside his, and screams out my name and says, "Where are you?" And I stand up and I says, "It's me." And he goes, "Your reputation precedes you. You sit there. You sit there and you don't move." So he'd obviously been told by the fucking, the other teachers, "You've got this fella in your class. You have to watch out for him. He's very disruptive." So he makes a point to say. And at that point, I'm in fifth year, so that didn't hurt. I felt like a legend. That's how fucked up it was. That's a bad thing. That's a teacher coming into a classroom, screaming a student's name, and then separating that student and putting him up at the front of the class beside his desk to go, "You can't participate in the class like the rest, because I already know you haven't got a hope. So sit up here underneath my nose." But I felt like a legend. I felt like a fucking legend when that happened, because everyone in the class who didn't know who I was like, "Wow, who the fuck is this guy? This guy must be crazy." And it felt amazing. And now, as a grown adult, I think that's really sad. That's really sad that my identity had shifted towards having a really high sense of self-esteem because I'm so unruly and disruptive. That myself is, any hope that I'd had of achieving self-esteem or self-worth from achieving goals or engaging with my study or simply engaging with the, here's the thing about that breaks my heart about fucking school, lads. I had the opportunity to learn about history, poetry, economics, all these things, geography, science, stuff that I fucking love. I'm a curious person. I had the opportunity to learn about all those things, and I didn't take it. I didn't take it. And I'm not going to self-flagellate over not taking that opportunity, because what was I going to do? So in fifth year, all I gave a fuck about was being the class clown. I wasn't smoking fags in the class or doing any of that. I was a little bit older. So instead, my disruptiveness became about, how can I, at any available opportunity, say something to the teacher that makes the entire class laugh out loud? How can I do that? And that's all I give a shit about. And that's when I say why school was fun. I used to get up every morning, go into school and go into class, and all I cared about was making everybody laugh. And with fifth year, it's a little different. The teachers teach you with a bit more maturity. Teachers tend not to scream at you when you're 15, 16. they don't do that. Instead, what they just say is just get out of the class, just leave the class. So every class, what would happen was, I would take the risk of, I'm going to say something, everyone's going to roar laughing, I feel amazing, and then the teacher's going to go, get out. So I'd get kicked out of every single class. I'd get kicked out of 3 classes a day. And when you're kicked out of class, you're expected to stand outside the door of the class. And the problem was, is the principal used to walk up and down the hall. So she saw you standing outside the class, she'd suspend you, which you couldn't have, because 3 suspensions equals expulsion. So as soon as I would get kicked outside the door, I'd disappear. I'd go into the toilets and smoke fags. But eventually what I started doing was, my art teacher was really, really sound. So when I got kicked out of a class, I'd just knock on the door of the art room. And even if there was other classes going on, he would just let me sit at the back of that art class and just draw. So that's what I used to do. When I was in fifth year, I wasn't attending barely any classes at all. I was getting kicked out, or sometimes simply not turning up, and just going to the art room and drawing, listening to music, because that's all I wanted to do. But at the same time, falling behind massively in every one of my subjects, because I'm not present. And the thing is, it's not like I'm mitching, it's not like I'm not in the school. I'm in the school, I'm just up in the art room, and no one stepped in and stopped. The principal didn't come in and say, what are you doing up here in the art room? You should be back in economics class. It was like an agreement. It was like, if he's up in the art room and he's drawing and he's got his earphones on, he's actually quiet. He's not disrupting any classes. And he's not mitching. He's not walking around town in a school uniform. He's in the school. So this weird compromise emerged. But again, now as an adult, I go, that's fucking horrendous. I'm 16. What the fuck are you doing? Why the fuck are all the teachers okay with me spending most of my time in an art room drawing, not attending classes? The adults are essentially failing me because I'm a kid. If someone's going to let me draw and listen to music, I'm going to do it. Now, if you're thinking, but Blind Boy, you can do art, music, all these things for the Leaving Cert. You can do creative subjects. They're on the Leaving Cert curriculum. But the problem is, in my school, these were seen as messer subjects. So they weren't seen as real subjects in my school. So you weren't allowed to do more than one messer subject for the Leaving Cert. So I couldn't do art, music and technical drawing, we'll say. Those are 3 things that would have been available to me in my school. Art, music and technical drawing. I had to pick one. So you couldn't do art and music at the same... I should have studied music for my Leaving Cert. I'm a professional musician. I was playing a lot of instruments at the time. I loved music with all my heart. But I couldn't, because I was already doing art. And if you did art, it meant then that the other subjects you had to do for your Leaving Cert were really limited. So I had to do art, accounting and economics. Now, I enjoyed economics a bit, but I did not enjoy accounting, lads. I can barely count. Fuck am I doing in accounting? Of course I failed it. But that was it. It was like punishment for doing art. Art and music were seen as messing subjects. Like on a Wednesday afternoon, we used to have double art, which was almost an hour of being in the art room. And the other teachers would just joke about it before lunch. Your business teacher would joke and say, Oshie, you've got a half day, practically. You're going up to the art room. And if you wanted, the only way for me to have studied subjects that meet my actual needs, my creative needs and abilities, the only way for me to have done that as part of my education for the Leaving Cert would have been if I'd have gone to what we called the Protestant school, which was the fee-paying school. Now, I didn't grow up poor or with any economic disadvantage. I would have grown up just enough, 2 working parents and a car, and never had to worry about food or electricity. And that stood to me. The privilege of that definitely stood to me. But I definitely wasn't going to a fucking private school that was $5,000 a year or whatever the fuck it was. So, yeah, if I'd have wanted to do art, music and technical drawing or whatever else creative things, my parents had to have money and send me to the private money school. And I'm not saying this to be all, oh, boo-hoo, poor blind boy couldn't study art and music. Oh, isn't that terrible? Like, in terms of complaints of what people have had to deal with growing up, that's pretty small. The reason I'm saying it is that there's a systematic failure at place if, when you go to a public school, which is a free school, a systematic failure is in place if creativity is actively demonized within that structure. If you're a creative student and you want to explore all of your talents and abilities and to achieve meaning and to receive an education that suits who you are, that's not available to you if you go for free education. You instead are told, nah, we're just going to shove you. You can do art if you want, but we're going to put you into accounting and business and you can fail them. Fuck that. There's no place for you in society. We don't value this. But if you grow up with money, then your parents can send you to a fee-paying school, and only with money can you explore subjects that are on the Leaving Cert curriculum but are creative. So you need to have $5,000 a year if you want to do that. That's systemically wrong. And it's pure fucking, it's pure Irish Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, set people up for the civil service. Set people up for the civil service or maybe being a priest. And artists, they exist. We've loads of artists in Ireland, but they're on the fringes, they're on the outside. They're drunken, disruptive lunatics who we demonise when they make art, but recognise them when the British or Americans give them credit. And then, even then, we don't recognise their art, we're just turning it to something we can get tourism out of. So then by fifth year, I almost got expelled in fifth year. I can't even remember what it was for. I can't even remember. But I was ordered to go to the disciplinary committee. And the disciplinary committee is, it's the last step before you get kicked out of the school, where basically three teachers have to go over your written record and they interview you. And based on this interview, they decide whether you stay in the school or not. And one teacher, again, he was one of the A-class teachers. Doc was his name. He's a legendary teacher in that school, known as being an absolutely fantastic teacher. I think he died a few years ago. But I was in front of the disciplinary committee. They were looking at my record and they were going, you have one of the worst records in this school we've ever seen. We don't see a place for you in this school. We don't see why you should be here. I was like, fuck it, grand. And then Doc turns to me and says, what do you want to do in 10 years? And I'd never been asked that. And I just turned around and I started talking about, I love painting. I love writing things. These are the bands I'm listening to. I love listening to Bob Dylan. I love David Bowie. I love Wu-Tang Clan. And all of a sudden now, my entire demeanor is changing. How articulate I am is changing. And I'm speaking about shit that I really deeply care about and like. The stuff I was going home to my room to enjoy, I'm now speaking to teachers because someone said to me, what are your interests? What are your actual interests? And based on that, Doc, the teacher, said, well, your record is horrendous, but you clearly have a lot of ambition. Even though this ambition doesn't appear to be have anything to do with school, so we're going to give you a second chance. So they gave me a second chance. And then sixth year came around, and I'm 16, 17, and then I finally got expelled in sixth year, in February of sixth year. And I can't remember what I got expelled for. Probably just a load of different things. And it was an agreed upon expulsion. The principal basically said to me, I'm not going to officially expel you from this school. It's February, so what I want you to do is don't come into this school until the Leaving Cert. Do not step foot in the door of this school until you're sitting the Leaving Cert. And if I see you in this school, that's an automatic expulsion on your record and you're going to have to find a new school to sit the Leaving Cert in. So I left school in February of sixth year. I didn't come in. I stayed at home. And what I did was, as a thank you to the principal, because I was like, oh, thank you so much for not literally expelling me. I spent those months between February and June not studying for my Leaving Cert because I didn't give a fuck about my Leaving Cert. I spent those months, I did a huge painting. I'd gotten an airbrush because I was learning how to use an airbrush to paint. So I got this huge canvas and I painted this massive painting of the school. And it was in the style of Salvador Dali. And it took me months and months to do. And I put so much effort into it. And my plan was is that I was going to present this painting to the school at our graduation mass. Because before we graduate for sixth year, which I was allowed to attend, we'd have this big mass in the church. And I said to the principal, I'm going to do this lovely painting as a mark of gratitude. Can I present it at the mass? And she goes, of course you can. But what I did was, just above the school, I painted this huge penis in the clouds, but hidden in such a way that you could only see it from a certain angle. The way that I'd shaded it, you could only see it from a certain angle. So you couldn't look at it and correctly identify a penis unless you were at a certain angle. So I could never be accused of putting it in there. I could say, that's just your eye. You're seeing a penis in the clouds. Why are you seeing a penis in the clouds? But I told all the lads. So finally then on the graduation mass, the principal calls up my name and I get to go to the top of the church. All the students and everyone's parents were there. And I got to stand beside the principal with my giant painting, beside the principal and the priest in the church with my giant painting of the school and a huge cock in the clouds that all the students knew about. And that was my final fuck you. That was my final fuck you to the school, to be honest. And I don't know if they even found out about I think the painting is in the school somewhere. It was in the staff room for a while, I believe. And the thing is that the penis was there as a rumour. You could only see the penis in the painting from a certain angle. So you'd have to find that angle first. You can't correctly identify it. So it existed as a rumour. I don't know where the painting has gone now. And I'd love that for that to be like the end of the fucking story. Because that's like a high to leave on. And it felt great because it's like, there's the final fucking act of the mad bastard. The penis in the painting. And then I had to sit my fucking Leaving Cert in June. Which was awful. Which was horrendous. Because I hadn't done any fucking study. I hadn't thought about it. I just turned up. I'm not able to do maths. I'm barely able to count. So I had to do foundation maths for my Leaving Cert, right? I was the only student in the school doing foundation maths. Foundation maths is the lowest level of maths. You can't even pass foundation maths. No matter what result you get in foundation maths, it's not even considered a pass in the Leaving Cert. And I wasn't even able to do it. And the saddest fucking moment of my school years was, we're all in the giant hall. And this is sixth year now, so I'm like 17. Everyone else there is 17, 18, some people 19. So we're adults effectively. We have the maturity, you know. And we're all sitting down doing our fucking maths exam. First off, I'm the only person getting the foundation paper. That gets a little giggle. And then I couldn't do it. I was so bad at maths, I couldn't even do foundation maths. I couldn't even do it. And I got up and walked out of foundation maths in the Leaving Cert. After 5 minutes, I'd say easily after 5 minutes. And the whole place erupted in laughter. like it was a joke, like I'd just done a funny joke, and this was another like performance that I was doing, and it wasn't at all. And that felt like fucking shit. That really felt like shit, to have the whole place laugh thinking that I was joking, because I walked out on foundation mats after 5 minutes, and that felt like fucking shit. It felt like shit walking out of the Leaving Cert hall like that. So I failed my Leaving Cert, couldn't get into any college, and then luckily via a PLC course was able to get into art college because I got 600 points in my art college portfolio. But the thing is, lads, a month or two after I walk out of that Leaving Cert exam, like a month or two after, and I'm no longer in school, and now I'm in the real world, and I'm looking at my 18th birthday, that's when I start to present with my severe mental health issues. I didn't really have mental health issues in school. I had a touch of depression, what I now see as depression, in the summer of 5th year. But as soon as I got out of 6th year and I didn't have school to go to anymore, and now I had to face, oh fuck, I'm an adult. I'm an adult in the real world, and there's nothing next year. There's no school to go back to next year. That's when I started to experience intense anxiety attacks, agoraphobia, bad depression, thoughts of suicide. That's when that presented itself. And like, why wouldn't it? I had to survive through secondary school using very heavy defense mechanisms on a day-to-day basis. I don't think I lived authentically through secondary school. And like, it had a deep impact on me. I don't get recurring dreams, but I have one recurring dream, and I get about once or twice a year. And that dream is me as an adult now having to put on a school uniform and go back and sit down with a bunch of 16-year-olds in school, and to have to feel the way I felt in school. To have to feel the shame of failure that intensely now as an adult in that uniform. That's my recurring dream. That's my recurring nightmare. And it's happened every year since I've left school. I'm someone who was capable of being a good student. I'm someone who was capable of getting a good Leaving Cert. I was someone who was capable of turning up to school every day, engaging with the curriculum and finding a sense of meaning from it, and doing all the positive things that come from that, setting and achieving goals. I did 6 years of not achieving any goals, to be honest, like. And I, like, identifying as a class clown or identifying as a mad bastard, that's a defense mechanism, because the system is telling me that, oh, you're a piece of shit in 3B2, and the teachers are calling you a gurrier. And then I have to cope by forming a new identity around being a mad bastard, and that's where my self-esteem comes from. They're heavy-duty defense mechanisms there. So I've no doubt that the amount of lying to myself on a daily basis that I had to do contributed to my massive mental health issues. And school was fun. I had loads of crack. I enjoyed it. But the summer after the Leaving Cert, I felt deep, deep shame. I felt so much fucking shame at having let myself down, having underperformed. Because when I was 17, 18, out of school, I'm able to look back at that now as an adult and look back at my time in school and identify bits of where the system failed me. And I'm able to have self-compassion, because I'm in my 30s, so I can be very compassionate towards myself when I'm 12, 13, and I'm able to go, sure, I was very immature then. So it's not fair for me to expect so much of myself at that age. The adults should have been helping me out. But when I was just out of 6th year, at maybe 17, 18, I didn't have the maturity and wisdom to have that type of compassion and allow that much fallibility for myself when I was 13. So when I got out of secondary school, deep, deep, intense shame of going, you're fucking smart. You're actually really smart, and you know you're smart, and you know that you love knowledge and love writing and are passionate about things, and you just failed your Leaving Cert. So I would have blamed myself really fucking hard, which didn't help my mental health issues. And there's a separate timeline. A separate timeline exists where I got a good fucking Leaving Cert and maybe had more opportunities. Like, I went to art college and loved it, and I'm very happy right now, but it would have been nice to have more opportunities. I wouldn't have been able to study music. I wouldn't have been able to study film. All these things weren't available to me because I'd failed my Leaving Cert. But luckily with art college, they didn't require you to pass maths, and you could make up for it with portfolio points. So that's how I got into art college. So I answered one question there now. A young fella called PJ, who's 16, who's in secondary school, asked me, what was your experience in secondary school? That was it there, PJ. And I wasn't expecting a long to dedicate to the entire podcast, but that felt therapeutic. That felt a little bit therapeutic for me to explore memories like that. And I'm sure that's not the worst experience at school. I'm sure there's people who had fucking far worse experiences than that. Far, far worse. I'm just saying it's my experience. It's my experience. I had a huge laugh, but I was let down. I was let down. The system doesn't work for everybody. All right, I'm going to be back next week with a hot take, most likely, because I'll have the time to research a hot take. The few things I'm thinking about. Mind yourselves. Enjoy the fucking bit of weather, lads. Enjoy. First 10 days of March are always dodgy, but once the first 10 days are done, it's clear sailing from there. Evenings getting longer, different smell, buds appearing on trees, lot of positivity in the air. So embrace that. Embrace it. Don't miss it. Be mindful of it. It's a lovely little thing to look forward to. We're done with winter now. It's over. Fuck winter.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.